Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV. It is the original podcast, Originals podcast. I'm joined by Chloe and by Dan for this one. No, Paulie's not very well at the moment, unfortunately.
Oh, stop it now.
Yes, indeed, Dan. He will be here all week, thankfully. We've got loads to talk about today, actually. We're going to talk about Manchester City and Liverpool. It's coming on the horizon. 12:30 kickoff at the weekend and stuff. We're going to talk about Liverpool's fixtures over the next, 6 weeks, give or take, and how we think we could do. And obviously, we thought we'd better talk about the point deduction for Everton and what this could potentially mean for the likes of Manchester City and Chelsea as well. And I'm going to try and play it fairly straight, but also with a smile on my face, because Everton did get deducted 10 points, and that's just funny. So we'll do that in part two. We're going to do Liverpool and Manchester City before then. Before we do get any further into it, though, we're going on tour. If tour's a thing, for 2 dates in Ireland and Northern Ireland. So we're starting off in Northern Ireland. We're doing Belfast on the 24th of March, and we're doing Dublin, Ireland on the 25th of March. You can get your tickets from ticketmaster.ie. We hope to see you over there. It has been 6 years. It will have been 7 years since we've actually done live shows over in... the last time we did them was in Dublin, actually, in Ireland. So yeah, quite looking forward to getting back out there and taking Red Men TV on tour. So please come and join us for that one if you've not got anything else on, and you won't have anything else on because you like me and you don't plan that far in advance. But we're going to talk about Liverpool and Manchester City to begin with, and I'm going to start with probably the person who's going to be the most nervous of the three people on the couch for the game at the weekend. Yeah, Chloe, you guessed it.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
You know, I was feeling all right about it because I kind of forgot about it. But then I saw the fact that the South American players don't get back until like Wednesday, which means they only had Thursday and Friday to train and try and get used to the, you know, try not to have too much jet lag. That worried me a little bit. I was also reading, you know, at the start of the week when the journalists got a little bit bored and put out the 10 players who might be missing from City v Liverpool, and Erling Haaland's expected to be fit now, no surprise. Rodri, who had a little bit of an injury, played pretty much the full game for Spain the other day. I'm getting more nervous, you know, the closer it gets, but I'm also excited to see the Reds again.
Yeah, well, I think that's it, isn't it? Obviously, it's crap having no games and, you know, hearing about the international fixtures that have taken place, and occasionally asking someone, like this morning, Dan, how did England get on against whoever they were playing, and Dan told me Malta, because
yeah, Tony Drago.
Wow, okay. There we go. Dan, we have got, and we will find out, sorry, about this Liverpool side in the next 11 games, won't we? Because this is, we've talked a lot about it's early season, it's early doors and all this type of stuff, but like, we've had a third of the season now. This is the part we'll find out what all of the top six and how they're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because it's a really congested part of the season. It's a crucial part of the season. We spoke a lot about sort of staging a campaign and sort of manufacturing what could be the rest of the season, and what does a title race look like at this stage? Doesn't really look like anything, does it? But these next few weeks will start to shape that most definitely. And I think we'll see a couple drop off. I think we've already seen Spurs start to drop off, to be honest. And from our point of view, it's interesting because I'm not really nervous going into this weekend. weekend, or indeed what's to come thereafter, because I don't think anyone truly expected that we would most definitely be going toe-to-toe in Manchester City. It's not like previous seasons whereby we've come so close and the season after you go, well, we've got to go and win it this time. We've got to sort of go one better or whatever, because we were so far off it last season and it was such a turnaround in the summer in terms of personnel. Obviously, the captain went and all that type of stuff. Nobody really thought, well, we have to go and win the league, did they? Like, for me, the bare minimum this year is top four, maybe go win one of the Cups, the Europa League, something like that. So the fact we are where we are now, I'd a bit your hand off for it. So this next little bit, including starting on Saturday, is a little bit, it's exciting, it's a bit of an adventure really, because I've got no doubt we can continue to play as well as we have been and come out on the other side of it there or thereabouts again. But we've got nothing to lose, really, especially on Saturday at the Etihad, because who knows if we do go there and give them a bloody nose. And I think they'll be more worried about us, and it'll be interesting for me to see how Guardiola approaches it, because we'll get a tell quite early doors if Guardiola is scared of us or not by what he does in terms of his tactics, in terms of his team play. Exactly. If he peps himself on the weekend, all of a sudden we go, he's terrified of Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool again. And that's massive. We don't have to be worried about Manchester City, because does anybody really think we're definitely going to be in the title race? I don't think anyone did, so let's just have a go at it.
I think the other thing, Chloe, in all of this is, like Dan said there, a bit your hand off for this position, and I think every Liverpool fan would probably agree with that. Even the most optimistic of Liverpool fans, and that would be Paul, had us third this season, yet all of us had us a second this season. But I think when you think about it and the way that we've played so far and the sort of back end of the last run of fixtures, because of the Luton result and the Toulouse result, everyone was a little bit down in the dumps going into the international break. Obviously, we get the win beforehand and stuff. But now you're thinking, well, actually, why can't we challenge? I mean, we're only going to improve, as I see it, from here on in. And we're right with them already. So they should fear us, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I guess so. I think obviously, we talk about Manchester City and it just feels like they're perfect all over. In every single position, it feels like no matter if they need to put a backup in there, oh, well, it's going to be a £50 million backup. Who's going to be good enough? With Liverpool, it's not always like that. Look, we've lost Andy Robertson, who I think was being questioned in terms of, we all wanted a centre-back / left-back with a left foot. He came in and he's done brilliant so far this season. And now we've got to rely on Kostas. And I think we can all sit here and say Kostas is a decent footballer, but when he's your main left back week in, week out, that's when you kind of see little bits of the problem. And I think when it comes to City, is they can just hurt you in so many ways, and they kill you slowly at times, because they'll make 700 passes and they'll eventually score a goal, or they can literally come out and score three within 30 minutes. That's just what they do. We're Liverpool, it seems like we only have one kind of method to play, and things have to go well for us. But saying that, I think, like Dan mentioned, we've got to go there and we've got to put something on them. We've got to basically say, we're not afraid of you, because the only way to beat Manchester City is going head-to-head with them and toe-to-toe with them, because if you sit back, they'll eventually break you down. So, yeah, I'm excited, because I feel like City should worry a little bit, and maybe they overthink it, and hopefully they do. But also, you know, we know how dangerous they are, and Liverpool will have to be at their highest level of concentration and focus, and energy, which is a big thing, because I think when we looked at that Luton game and Toulouse, everyone was like, they just look a bit knackered, and not like the fully, you know, not desire, because I definitely think the desire was there, but it just looked like we were a shell of ourselves. We just looked tired. An international break where we've got several captains, you know, they're never going to get time off. So, yeah, Liverpool have to show up with energy, with a statement, and scare Manchester City as much as they can.
We've had a bit of a tough time at the Etihad in recent years, though, Dan, haven't we? You know, and I think just in general against Manchester City, I think they've been better than us in the games that we've played over the last few years. I think Guardiola has got to grips with what Jurgen Klopp's sides want to do and how they try and play football and stuff. But again, you know, that was us in a different formation. Yep. You know, it was us in our normal 4-3-3. And I think with this sort of change of mentality as well as change of tactical fluidity, maybe, I think he's going to come up with something a bit nuts, Guardiola, because he can't help himself at times. Whereas I think it's more of the same for Liverpool. It's just like, well, we know we're going to have to sit back. We know we're going to have to defend. Liverpool, when they do, they're actually really good defensively. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's when we're in transition that I think we get stuck, unstuck at times. But we know that we can hit them on the counter-attack. We've consistently proved that down the years.
We did it last season.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, Mo Salah doing some mad turn, turn the centre-half on the halfway line or whatever. And then, so I think there are positives that Liverpool can draw from the last few games. But ultimately, we know that, well, it's at the Etihad. If we lose, yeah, it's going to be a shitter. But we'll get them back to Anfield and we've got to improve there. And we can't let this game define the next 11 games, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say as well.
No, and there's a danger of that. Of course there is, because even if you take into account the fact that even if we're not in a title race when it comes to, you know, April, May time, off the back of this result, you can't then go and afford to drop points two or three times thereafter, because all of a sudden, what looked like quite a comfortable, inverted commas, race for the top four from Liverpool perspective becomes quite a complicated one. That's the last thing we want. We don't want to be scrambling around making sure we get Champions League football for next season, although fifth place might secure that as things stand in the Premier League. But that aside, I think you're right. And in terms of how we can hurt them, I think it's interesting because for so long, the sort of the fabled 4-3-3 was just bulletproof, essentially, from Liverpool perspective, wasn't it? But that was kind of our plan, and it was our plan throughout, and eventually it was going to get you. Not necessarily always Man City, because they're a world-class football team, and you're right, I think Pep Guardiola eventually worked out a way, certainly the Etihad, to sort of quell the tide of that and to stop us being so effective. But now, with the Trent going into midfield stuff, it does feel like he might look at that and try and navigate something, because we know how obsessed he's been with Liverpool in the past. We've seen the footage from their documentary at Everton halftime. He's talking about our front three and stuff like that. So we are absolutely in his head. There's no two ways about it. And I just wonder, last season he wouldn't have cared about Liverpool necessarily. He might have sort of proven in that result we mentioned. But I wonder now whether he is just looking at Liverpool. He's already mentioned us a couple of times in his press conferences and that, when he's asked who are your biggest rivals, your biggest challenges this season. He's mentioning Liverpool again. So I do wonder whether he will come up with something for the weekend whereby try to nullify what Trent can do for midfield, for example. And that might mean we have to go to a 4-3-3 again, because if he forgets we can just do that. I think Liverpool actually need to remember we can play a normal 4-3-3 still, because I like the inversion. I like Trent popping into midfield. I think it works in certain games, but I think the Luton is the biggest case in point when it didn't work. And if we'd just gone, you know, you'd be a fullback to the right and left back in that game, Tsimikas and Trent, that might have been more effective. So the fact Liverpool now have more than one string to their bow, in the most simplest possible terms, might work in our favour.
Absolutely. Go on, Clown.
You mentioned there, obviously, with the new system and everything, but the fact that Guardiola is talking about us when, I think he's already scared, because this is a Jurgen Klopp with a pretty much fully transformed side here, and he's already keeping up with you. He's not had, you know, years, or he had a little break in the summer where he was able to try and get the message across to some of those players. He's turned Darwin Nunes into a much better footballer already than he was last season. He's Szoboszlai's unbelievable in midfield. You know, our backline, Virgil van Dijk, looks like he's been reignited. He looks back to the Virgil van Dijk we all know. And I think Guardiola talking about us, he probably didn't expect Liverpool to be where they are, because that's a full midfield that Jurgen Klopp's had to transform there. And I think the fact that he's mentioning us makes, you know, he thinks, yeah, they're in my mind here, they're coming, because it should be Arsenal that he should be fully focused on, because Arsenal were the one who last season pushed you, not to the end, but they did push you. Liverpool, with a fully transformed midfielder and players who don't fully understand exactly what Jurgen Klopp wants from them just yet, it's saying something. He's already speaking about us.
It is. But players aside, regardless of sort of the personnel we have at our disposal, for what it's worth, I think on paper our squad is better than Arsenal's. I think there's certain positions you could look at, Declan Rice being probably one of the main ones, and go, yeah, their six is better than our specialist six or whatever. But it's the managers for me in terms of Pep Guardiola. Yeah. He is terrified of Jurgen Klopp. He is not terrified of Mikel Arteta. No. He made Mikel Arteta what he is. Like, he's still the understudy to Mikel Arteta in Pep Guardiola's mind. He's not looking at him going, God, you could do me for a title when it gets tight and neck and neck. Nah, not at all. He's seen Jurgen Klopp do it in the Bundesliga with Borussia Dortmund, go up against an absolute giant in Bayern Munich and overcome it. He's seen Liverpool do it under Jurgen Klopp, overcome his own Manchester City side. He is more scared of Jurgen Klopp than he is of Mikel Arteta. That's just a fact. So whenever Liverpool get a squad together that even looks like remotely like it could be able to challenge Man City, Pep Guardiola will be panicking about Liverpool football.
I agree with with that completely. I think, you know, Jürgen Klopp's got that X factor that he can just push an extra 10-15% out of the players, where I'm not sure Arteta's got that. Arteta, at best, is going to be nearly as good as Pep Guardiola. That's as far as I see
it. He could turn out to be brilliant, but he hasn't done it yet.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do we know?
No, we don't. We don't. And, like, there's no way Pep Guardiola teaches him all that's in his head. You can't, for a start. You'd need something out of Harry Potter to start pulling stuff out and keep them in some kind of vase or bowl or whatever it is. Do you know what I'm talking about? No,
not Harry Potter,
Harry Potter.
Sorry,
no Harry Potter references.
No. You need Paul for it, big time, isn't he?
Right, he's not a Harry Potter fan.
No, he's never read the books,
I'm afraid.
I've watched them, I just don't remember any of them.
It's a real big shame, to be honest with you. Voldemort is a character, but he shall not be named. We shouldn't say that out loud in case he is actually back. Spoilers, if you're just about to watch any of the films that have been on for about 20 years. He's back. And it was all Chloe's fault. So we'll move on anyway because we are kind of talking about Voldemort, I suppose, in Pep Guardiola. Nice. He's the Voldemort of the Premier League at the moment. He is absolutely brilliant, and this is the thing, and we're going to talk about the City and what could happen in point deductions and all that in part two. But I wanted to take a little look at the fixture list. Before I do that, I want Dan to give us an update on what's going on in the international duty so far, because I don't know.
How long have you got? I have to write these down because there's been a lot going on. Liverpool, like, normally international breaks come and everyone's a bit like, and people still are a bit like, oh, whatever, who's asked? But this time around, Liverpool lads have been starving around the world. So Boslai and Mason got two very quick goals for Hungary to turn that around. They've qualified. He's obviously Hungary captain as well, so congratulations to him. Did see him drinking something that looked a little bit like vodka, like a shot or something. Yeah, you can knock that on the head quite quickly. We play at 12:30 Saturday. Trent Alexander-Arnold played...
Okay. He was drinking vodka.
Something like that. Yeah, it might not be.
Shot of water, I'm sure.
I think it was Hungarian liquor or something. Because I seen Ben Spoussac.
And I don't remember the rest.
I wasn't like Panenka, but obviously wasn't that. It was something like that. Anyway, Trent played in midfield for England. And I mean in midfield with the number 10 against Malta.
Man of the match.
Played really well.
Was it Pacino?
Pal Sutton.
Yeah, somebody tell us in the chat. Virgil van Dijk and Cody Gakpo have qualified with the Netherlands, and they're both brilliant in that game as well. Virgil van Dijk in particular was outstanding. You might have seen that tackle he made was quality. Diogo Jota got an assist for Portugal. Luis Diaz provided the heroics for Colombia, and his dad's in the crowd celebrating, which was nice to see. And they're coming to Liverpool as well for Christmas, which is also nice. Darwin Nunez scored for Uruguay against Argentina and was hailed by Lionel Messi, no less, afterwards, which is not bad. Harvey Elliott scored for the under-21s and squared up to a lad, which was quite funny. Mohamed Salah scored 4 and then got chased aggressively off the pitch and nearly got beaten up. Interesting.
He also faced someone up as well.
He did, he did a little bit. Yeah, Darwin Nunez's influence is rife in this side right now. And Ben Doak got an assist for the under-21s. There's probably more than that. But that's kind of a little roundup for you. I wonder how far away Ben Doak is from a Scotland senior.
4 goals for Mo and
that's
a leg.
That's insane, Jeremy.
He also got an assist in the second game for Trezeguet, I think it was.
David? David. There won't be David Trezeguet there.
No, you're talking about
David Trezeguet.
Also, Jota was an unused substitute like yesterday or something.
Doesn't play a lot for Portugal, does he?
No, which is great for us. Yeah.
But there you go, that's a lot.
Okay,
so
let's look at Liverpool's fixtures then next. I've got them all on because we're doing the biased Premier League podcast or whatever it is. Bias football podcast after this. It may as well be, hadn't it, to be fair. Like, we never talk about any other leagues. So I've got Liverpool's, first of all, Manchester City v Liverpool on the 25th. Excuse me, Liverpool v Lask.
Who does City
on the
play?
30th. It's literally in the column next to me. Liverpool v Fulham on the 3rd. Sheffield United versus Liverpool on the 6th of December. Palace v Liverpool on the 9th. Union Saint-Gilloise v Liverpool on the 14th. Liverpool versus Manchester United. That's in the far column there for you, Chloe.
Thank you.
On the 17th. Liverpool play West Ham in the Carabao Cup over there. Liverpool Arsenal on the 23rd. Burnley v Liverpool on the 26th. And Liverpool v Newcastle on the 1st of January. 11 games, 6 home, 5 away, 4 I've deemed tough games. They be in reverse order: Newcastle, Arsenal, United, and Manchester City. It's not the easiest of runs, and there's not a lot of downtime in between those games, is the clue.
No, it's 3 games a week, would you say, Chris Page?
No. 2 games a week. You can only say 3 games a week if you play Monday Thursday, Sunday. The only time. You can't include Sunday twice.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, it's three games a week, so, like, Liverpool...
It's not! Games. It's fucking two games a week.
Yeah, Liverpool, they don't have much time off. They need to make sure that we're rotating as much as possible, which is why I like the Europa League, in the sense of, like, I mean, you can... the Champions League, you physically have to play your strongest 11 unless you've qualified every game. So hopefully we can make some changes in those group stages. But aside from that, yeah, Liverpool need to make sure they don't pick up any injuries. But Jürgen Klopp's teams, they love the momentum of when you're winning and bouncing into games. They love a really busy fixture schedule, because you just use the momentum. So if Liverpool can somehow, you know, start with an unbelievable win against Manchester City, that could really pave the way. But what we need to make sure is that no matter if we drop points in any of them, whether it's a disappointing result or just a result that, you know, City, I'd take a 0-0 right now if you really asked me, I'd take a point. And if we were to get battered by City, you just need to forget about it and make sure that you put it to one side and you go again.
Dan, what do you reckon then? What would you take right now from the City game?
Oh, I'd take a point right now all day long. Yeah, to go to the Etihad and not get beat and to stay 1 point behind them on their coattails would be massive. That'd be a huge result. Like, no two ways about it. I mean, the fixtures coming up there, it's going to be almost impossible to sort of go perfect within them. It's not impossible to sort of stay unbeaten within them, I wouldn't have said. Liverpool are more than capable of that, but winning every game feels difficult, but I think City's fixtures aren't exactly the easiest either coming up. So if we do stay just 1 point behind them after going there, that'll, if they're not worried about us already, they definitely will be after that. And yeah, I think that'd be a big statement from us as well, to be honest with you, because I reckon a lot of people aren't talking about Liverpool yet. A couple of people sort of mentioned us in passing. A lot of the talk is Arsenal still because of what they did last season. But if we suddenly go to the Etihad, put on a decent performance and come away with results, people will have to pay attention to us then.
Three of those four tough games that you've labelled at home.
Yeah, loads of Anfield.
Liverpool, Man United, yeah. Liverpool, Arsenal, Liverpool, Newcastle, yeah. The three games at home. Yeah.
That's massive as well. Because like we've been talking about this all along, is that if Liverpool can just stay in touching distance of Manchester City coming into, you know, the Christmas period, well, Liverpool fans will then have something to believe in. I think all right now we're sat here and we're like, oh my God, like we can't expect, like how are we here? But if you go into that December period where it's a game every 2-3 days and you're in touching distance of Manchester City, the crowd will be up. There's something there to fight for. There's something there to hold hope on to. So yeah, it's massive that they're at home as well. It feels like they're one after each other, but at least, you know, the crowd at Anfield will be immense.
The other thing I think about this Manchester City side and this Liverpool side in this sort of run so far, Liverpool are better than I expected and Manchester City are worse than I expected, and that's the one thing that always holds me back when I think about Manchester City is the difference between us and them is I think they can go on a 15 game winning streak, and I'm yet to see that from us, that we can do that at this point with this team. But I believe that City should be given the benefit of the doubt that they can still do it, because they've done it pretty much every year for 5 years. They've gone on one of them mad winning streaks, but right now, judged on the 12 games that they've played so far, they're not as good a side as they were last season and the season before and the season before that. So why can't Liverpool take advantage? If we can get ahead of them in this game, then I think the doubts really start to come into Manchester City's minds, because they start to fear us. We've gone the Etihad, we've done them over. We're behind them. We've got Spurs and Villa coming up. Two massive games, which is what City would be heading into after us in the Champions League game or whatever it is. That's a real marker down. So that's why I wouldn't take a point right now, to be honest with you. I would go for the fucking jugular, because a point's nothing in the grand scheme of things. Not when you're trying to win a league. We've said this for how many years have we all thought this? You've got to, a point's not, and a draw's not good enough. You've got to beat Manchester City when it's there for the taking. And that's what I truly believe. Because this Liverpool side can fucking draw against Luton. So take the win against Manchester City, because there's a mad draw coming down the line somewhere else.
But you can say that about them, couldn't you, now? Because I think you're right in terms of they don't look... It sounds so stupid because he won a treble. They don't look the all-conquering force that they have been in previous seasons. Right now, anyway, it doesn't seem to be happening. Whether that's Kevin De Bruyne's absence and the Rodri stuff that's been happening in recent weeks, who knows?
We've been playing without a DM all year.
Well, yeah, exactly. They don't look...
just our fault, like, but...
they don't look, to use that word again, they look bulletproof as they have been recently. So I take your point entirely, but what I would say is if you could guarantee me now 4 points from the two Manchester City games, I would bite your hand off. Yeah. Absolutely bite your hand off, which would be a draw this weekend, beat them at our place all day long. Because, yes, we could drop points further down the line, but so could they. Like, I don't see them. Right? You can only go off what we're seeing right now, can't you? And you're right, in previous seasons, it took them till February, and then all of a sudden they clicked into gear and watched them go. They did it last season a little bit with the Arsenal title race. So they are very capable, but right now they don't look capable of putting together a 10-15 game winning run. So, yeah, why not go there, get a draw, and take them back to Anfield and see if we can do them there.
For what it's worth, I'd take 4 points from the two games, but I'd rather it get the win at the weekend and put them under pressure for a bit.
Yeah,
if you were going to pick it.
Oh, yeah, listen, I'll take the win. But if you offer me a draw, then, yeah, get me out of there with a point.
Yeah.
4 points from six is different from one from three for me. I think, you know, you're guaranteeing that you come on top in the rivalry. We can still win and we can still level, you know, at the end of the day for me. So it's interesting, though. It's all good. It's all good. What's your gut telling you, Chloe? What is your gut telling you about this fixture and how it's going to play out?
They're going to dominate possession. We're going to need to be really strong on the counter. I think there'll be goals in it. Do I think there'll be goals? A lot for them, potentially. Look, I was there last season and yeah, we for the first 20 minutes or so, we looked brilliant. We looked like we could go toe-to-toe with them. And then I think like Rodri could have potentially got two yellows, didn't stay on the pitch, and it kind of, the momentum switched from that moment because we got so angry at the referee. It's the first time I've really seen Liverpool and Jordan Henderson at the time angry at like a referee decision, because I used to moan about us not mooning like every other football team did. And I think... come the 75th minute, everyone was like, yeah, see you later. See you at the next one. Bye-bye. And everyone had just got off because we'd been pulled apart, especially in that second half. So I need Liverpool. I don't know whether it'll happen, but I need Liverpool for the first 15 minutes to just shut up shop, take the sting out the atmosphere, make sure that, you know, everyone's just a little bit calmer, confident on the ball. And I'm fine with us soaking up pressure. We did it against Spurs. Manchester City had a whole different challenge, I know that. But we did it against Spurs with nine men. And, you know, with Joel Matip at the back and Virgil van Dijk, I thought they were brilliant. And us on the counter are really, really scary. So I expect us to counter quite a bit. But yeah, I'm going to say a 2-2 draw. Okay. I'd love the win, but I'm also petrified that it's going to be 4-1.
Dan, for you, David's asking, would you start Gomez or Costas at left back?
Costas. I would. I don't think the Joe Gomez thing works, to be honest with you. Makes us far too inverted all around the pitch, to be fair. And listen, if we're going to go there, and I got the Luton selection because it felt like we had enough sort of in the advanced areas of the pitch to go and break them down and win the game. We felt like we didn't need our fullbacks and our defenders to be as influential in the attacking sense, but clearly we did. And I also think the physical threat played a part in his selection, but it didn't work. We just, all over the pitch, like I say, we're far too inverted. Everybody wanted to come inside and it just didn't happen. So yeah, I would definitely go Tsimikas off us that whiff, because it plays into the fact that I'm slightly different to Chloe in terms of how I want and foresee the game going. I would fight fire with fire a little bit.
Go out there
and try and hit them hard. We've gone there and picked four attackers in the past. I wouldn't be surprised if we did that again at the weekend at all. Cody Gakpo would be the fourth one in that, because he can sort of do that hybrid 8/ attacking role. Like, I'd be interested in that. I just think there's an opportunity there for us to go. I think if you try and sit back and soak up pressure against Manchester City, you're asking for trouble, basically. And I've been there and seen us get absolutely done. I was at the Sadio Mane sending off game. Like, I've seen us get turned over.
Horrible,
yeah, it was grim, real grim. I've seen us get turned over at Manchester City. I know what they're capable of, but I just think Liverpool have got such firepower now. We've got such attacking flair that let's just go there and have a real go at them. Because we say it about other teams. We absolutely implore other teams to try and have a go at City, because, you know, that's the only way you're going to hurt them. We can't then go there and say, oh yeah, let's soak up pressure. For me, we just go there and just kill them. Try and kill them early goals.
I'm interested, who's your midfield then?
My midfield would be, it's McAllister at the base of it. Szoboszlai is an absolute shoo-in. I'd be tempted to go Cody Gakpo.
And then would you have Jota or Diaz on the left?
Diaz.
Ooh, Diaz is such an outlet in games like this, isn't he? I'd be tempted to go with Jota's in such good form. No, I wouldn't let go Diogo Jota. Because you've got Simicast to give you your whip down the left hand side. Yeah, I'd go Jota, Nunes, Salah. And the Gakpo one, listen, I think Ryan Gravenberch is boss. I've been singing his praises since he arrived at the football club. Don't quite know how fit he is. He missed the last couple of games, of course. And I just think Gakpo might offer that little bit of extra something in this game.
What about you then?
No, absolutely not. Ryan Gravenberch in the mid. I'm not having Cody Gakpo. I think I love Cody Gakpo, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's done enough in the first half of the season for me to throw him in this game.
I loved Cody Gakpo last season.
Yes.
I'm okay to say that I've not liked it this season.
I didn't mind him in the last game in midfield in that A position. He was all right.
He was a pick in the midfield.
We did it against Chelsea and it worked for 30 minutes, and when it didn't work we were absolutely all over the shop. And Manchester City, quadruple the team that Chelsea are, and if they want to pick us apart they will. I'm worried that Gakpo might not be defensively I just feel like if someone runs off him as an attacker he's not likely to think to track back, or he might recognise too late. And like you mentioned there, I don't think you have to soak up a load of pressure to get them on the counter attack. I think they throw that many bodies up into into your half of the pitch that if you just press them and get out to them and win a ball back, that's your counter attacking. You don't have to sit back on the back line and just soak up pressure. It just means that they're overloading like they do. And I just worry that putting Cody Gakpo in there, we might not be as disciplined as the word I'd go with. And I feel like you need to be extremely disciplined against Manchester City to come away with anything. You can't give away sloppy goals or just goals where we haven't tracked people. And also, look, Kostas, I think, is a good footballer. I don't think he's defensively disciplined, so I most defo don't want Cody Gakpo, who might also not be disciplined, on the side with Kostas. I just wouldn't like that as the centre mid. I'd ask Ryan Gravenberch to do that, and I'd tell him he needs to make sure he's switched on.
I'd have Gravenberch as well, but not because I have any particular concerns about Cody Gakpo and his defensive duties. It's just that he's an absolute
monster.
It's just something that City haven't come up against.
Yeah.
And I think back to, you know, when we really did trouble City every game, and, you know, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was in there driving forward and just attacking the shit out of them.
Yeah.
That first touch, I'm going to run at you, I'm going to cause panic. That's what I'd like to do. Yeah. My concern is that a little too attacking?
Maybe.
Because they are really good and Rodri's really good. Yes. But Gravenberch is so strong.
He's so physical, isn't he?
And he might just be the answer.
And also the other thing is, he gets in the box so much.
Yeah, he
arrives back post all the time. Like, is close control inside the area is absolutely ridiculous. But the point I'm thinking of is Brighton away, where he should bury the chance that he's got back post. And, you know, I've spoken about how we need to be disciplined, but Man City, because they're the home side, they have some players who just sit up and they're just too good. They just float about, and I think Ryan Gravenberch can run off them, and I think there can be spaces where someone doesn't track Ryan Gravenberch and he causes trouble back post. So yeah, I'd go with Ryan Gravenberch. I think he's on the off-turn, he's brilliant, and like I mentioned, if we do need to, you know, counter-attack, he's incredible for that, for turning a defender. He's, you know, he's a unit. He doesn't get bullied that often. So yeah, I like his physical presence in there as well. What would you do with Diaz and Jota? Would you?
Yeah.
I think his form's too good to ignore right now. I like Diaz as the outlet in terms of what he offers, his direct running, that type of stuff, but I just think Jota's just on fire. You can't leave him out. The Gravenberch Gakpo stuff's interesting. It's interesting because personally, I would play Gravenberch, but I've got a hunch that Klopp might go Gakpo. Mm-hmm. And because of the way he's used Bobby Firmino in these type of games in the past, he has gone with the four and he's included Bobby in that type of role. And I take your point about Gravenberch sort of defensively, but I'm not sure he's that defensively disciplined either. He wants to be sort of making things happen in the final third as well. And we've obviously got Szoboszlai on the other side. So yeah, I think Gakpo physically offers a load. I don't like him in midfield. I'm not a huge fan of it, but I just think this could be a game whereby he does go for and it does work for him. Because
where are we on Jones, Sonny?
I thought Jones was struggling a little bit back end of before the break. I thought his rhythm had just been completely broken by the suspension. And I don't think he is in this conversation. For me, it is Gravenberch or Gakpo, which is ridiculous because week in, week out, I would say don't do Gakpo in the midfield because I don't think it works that well. But this one game, this one-off situation against potentially a title rivals, there might just be something in that for me. I can't quite put my finger on what it is. It's, again, it's what he's done in the past, Klopp, and it's just the way Gakpo plays the role. His pressing's really good. I think he has got a little bit of sort of defensive acumen to do when he does it. So, yeah, I'd be really tempted to just go for it.
It is it's a really interesting one, and I take it everyone's just going Darwin up front. No one's even mentioned it because it's now the thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I suppose, Chloe, is that, again, Darwin in the type of form that he's been in, he will give their defenders nightmares. He might not score, but he'll give their defenders nightmares.
Yep.
And if that just frees up a little bit more space, because I think that's one of the things that I think Guardiola's done really well is how to sort of try and take Salah out of the games. I think we've seen teams, you know, for the most part, do that really well all season. I don't think Salah's played his best football necessarily, but he's still able to have that impact. He's able to get a goal, able to get an assist. But if Darwin Núñez just takes a bit of that attention away, then you never know. Salah might just pop up and have one of those worldies again.
Yeah, we all trust him, is what I think it is. You know, before the ball was kicked this season, I think all of us would have probably said, go with Cody Gakpo, he's your safest option. But now we've seen what Darwin Núñez has to offer and how much he's improved. I trust him to hold the ball up. I trust him to bring others into play and get
us up the pitch.
That's
what he's improved the most for me.
Yeah, it is, exactly. And you know what I really like? Because they're going to have so much of the ball, because they push their centre-backs up so high in possession. Darwin Núñez the other day, his goal against Argentina, their players had pushed up just... they hadn't quite made it into Uruguay's half, but they were literally on the halfway line practically. And one ball... in behind Darwin Núñez was off and he was onto it and he scored from it. And I think that's what you can do with Manchester City as well. I think he can hold the ball up and get others into play and maybe set Salah. But if they drag their defence up the pitch and do this high, not a high line because technically they're still in possession, but they move high with the ball, which they do, then I just tell Darwin Núñez, get on your bike. Every time you make sure.
Trent.
Yep, exactly.
And
now that I'm thinking of it, I'm thinking, well, that is exactly what Darwin Núñez loves, and they need to watch that high line when they're in possession, because if we win the ball and win a turnover, that is our outlet time and time and time again.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anything to add on Darwin, Dan?
No, I agree with everything that's been said there. I think he's improved markedly this season. I think what's done it really for me is loads of different things, understanding the system, that type of stuff, but I actually do think he's taken a leaf out of the likes of Bobby and Gakpo's book, and he's looked at the way they've done the role, because it must have been a bit of a kick in the teeth for him really midway through last season. He's been signed for big money the summer prior, and Gakpo come in, and you mentioned it there, he was the chosen one for so many games. You've also been looking at that going, what's going on here? Why can't I be the one that Klopp always turns to? And he's clearly watched the way Gakpo did the role and the way Firmino did it beforehand and gone, that's why I need to add that and that to my game. And he's done it over the summer. Credit to him, he's come on leaps and bounds, and he's a brilliant player. Of course, he's got all the physical attributes, he ticks every single box. His finishing can be hit and miss, but it can also be brilliant. That finish for Uruguay in midweek was outstanding. Like I've said it before, that's like R9-esque finishing. It really was brilliant. It was high quality. It was. He feints him, sits him down and goes again. It's right out the top drawer in the Newcastle goals and stuff like that. He's got it in his locker. But what he's now adding to his game is that link-up play. It's the hold-up play. It's the connection with Salah, which is just telepathic. So, yeah, I think Núñez for me, and I would not have thought I'd be sitting here in November saying this. He is an absolute must-starter right now in his Liverpool side, and credit to him for it.
Yeah, I think part of the reason that he's able to do this, and the thing I mentioned before when Chloe was talking for me, is that's the biggest part of his game that he's improved, the link-up play. But also, it's such an easy win for someone who runs in behind all the time, because all you have to do is run in behind once or twice, you get the defender thinking about it, and then you've opened up a shit ton of space for yourself to play in, and then that brings everybody forwards and gives your team time to move forward. So it was always the next phase of Darwin's evolution. God, I didn't even mean that. I didn't even mean it. It was always the next phase of it. But to see it come to fruition, to see him sort of shoulder it and be able to take it forward. It's absolutely brilliant. We're going to get into the Everton point deduction, what it could mean for City and Chelsea as well. I do have a couple of super chats that I need to get through, though. Hitch and Baz has said, big congrats on the Content Awards Hall of Fame, guys. You know, have more trophies than Everton do this decade. We've got tons more trophies than Everton do this decade. Thank you very much. Yeah, we won. Well, we were inducted into the Football Content Awards Hall of Fame on Thursday evening, which is absolutely wicked. Thank you to everybody who's watched, obviously, a big part of it. And Trevor Smith says, where Everton investigated before City? Very much so. And we're about to come on to that now. But before we do, we're going to take a very short break and tell you all about this year's knitted Christmas jumper.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is the type of content that we normally do in the Biased Football Podcast over on redmenplus.com, but it's too big a story, I think, not to talk about it in this show. Because Everton have been deducted 10 points, and you can see the big smile on my face because ultimately they're a rival. But actually, I think it's quite wrong at some point of this as well. It's going to be interesting because we've not actually spoken about our opinions on this with each other, the three of us together today or anything like that. So I think it's going to be quite an interesting discussion. But to just give you the broad top line layman's terms, Everton have been deducted 10 points for an overspend of £19.5 million over the course of a three season period. They've held hands with the Premier League essentially and been hamstrung by the Premier League for the last about three seasons as well. In that they've literally been going begging to the Premier League and going, can we do this? And the Premier League have gone, no. Because overspend, and they've gone, okay then. Well, and what should we do? Well, you should probably do this. So they've pretty much done everything that they can, I think. They're idiots, and they've breached the rules, and they've clearly done wrong, been caught cheating, which is, it is what it is. But it is a bit nuts for me anyway that they've been deducted 10 points, as though I am, part of me is happy that they've been deducted 10 points, but also it feels, I don't know, it feels really wrong to me on so many levels. Chloe, what was your first thought? I bet it was only Everton could lose points in an international break.
Yeah, it was. It was something like that. I remember, was it on the Friday? I can't really remember, but I remember I was just...
You started that with I remember.
Oh, sorry. I was on my phone. I remember the moral of the story of where I was.
Yeah, there we go.
It's one of those where, like, you know, when something massive happens and it's like 25 years down the line, you're like, where were you when that happened? I can tell you exactly where it was. I was just sat a man on my phone, and then I didn't have a clue that, like, I don't know why I didn't expect it to happen because I knew they were being investigated, but I most certainly didn't expect 10 points to be deducted. I expected a fine, and the reason I expected a fine was because I'd spoke to Toffee TV on numerous occasions and they were like, we'll be all right. Yeah, no, we've held hands with them. We'll just get like a fine, you know, a slap on the wrist and that'll be it. And then a 10 point deduction came up and the only thing I could do was laugh because... Like, it's just so Everton. Like, it couldn't be more Everton if you tried. They tried to go about it the right way and still got deducted 10 points. And ultimately, look, one side of me wants to say, you broke the rules. It is what it is. No one else. No, we haven't cheated. They haven't cheated. No one else is losing points either to you because you've broke the rules. But also, I'm not sure that the punishment fits the crime. I think 10 points is quite a lot for just one breaking of a rule. You've got someone down the road there who's broke 115. And the only way I see, I think they've like, they've counted it, and I think they expect only 6 points instead of 10. But my moral of the story is if you give 10 points deduction, that's perfectly fine, as long as you give Chelsea and Manchester City the similar consequences and the same consistency then. It all depends on what happens with the other two who are being investigated for me to make this, justifiable.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, obviously, there are extenuating circumstances that every Everton fan, I've been speaking to Baz and John Blaine today about it, and the understanding that I have from it is that, you know, COVID's happened, global pandemic, the Russian sanctions have caused a huge issue for them. Yeah. Everton have also been dickheads in the way that they've done their accounting and how they've got it wrong. But the USM stuff was like a £200 million deal. The Richarlison stuff was they were basically hamstrung by the Premier League and they couldn't actually get 80 million for who they think is an 80 million pound player, and Tottenham played them because of them having to sell. They've got the I mentioned the rights already. There's another one as well, which was like 40 million pound, which would have wiped it off. The way that they've done it has been kind of wrong as well, in that if they'd have taken a loan from a bank for the stadium, for example, they could have got 150 million quid and paid that off over 10 years, but they didn't. They did it a way which they thought was better, but it ended up being worse for them. Like, it doesn't, across it all, they've kind of come clean as well, which is the other thing, which is like, that's fucking admirable.
Yeah.
They've done it wrong. They've held the hand up and said, we've got it wrong. There's clearly been no sporting advantage. and yet they are getting the 10-point deduction, which is wild.
It is wild, yeah. And as Chloe said, I said this morning, the punishment doesn't fit the crime in this instance. But I think so. It all boils down to the fact that they have, you know, they've been grossly mismanaged from the top. There's no two ways about that. You mentioned a lot of the mistakes and errors in the ownership there. And also the free spending. Like, I listened to a little bit of Toffee earlier on. They were bemoaning the fact that people are talking about there was one mad summer, wasn't there, where they did spend far too much
in
money
2017.
On crap players, essentially, as well. Yeah, so they did sort of push their luck a little bit there, and I think they budgeted to finish a lot higher up the table in that campaign.
They budgeted
as well
to finish sixth when they finished 17th.
Yeah, so it's all a bit mad.
That's a complete gross mismanagement,
massively so. Yeah, and again, he obviously wants to walk away now. He wants to wash his hands of it, which has implications in his own, because, you know, who's going to want to buy a football club who's just been deducted 10 points, and then there's all this sort of other stuff looming over the head as well. But I think the main consensus and the main sort of point of their ire is the fact that, as you say, they were sort of complying with the Premier League. They could be complying with the Premier League for quite some time, and still they were slapped with probably the harshest possible punishment. It might get sort of knocked down a little bit to the stick.
It could go worse, though.
It could get worse. When you appeal anything, it could get worse. You open yourself up to that, of course you do, yeah. But I think their main gripe right now, from what I can sense, is the fact that, yes, we're guilty, but where on earth have you plucked that fine from in terms of the punishments, in terms of the points? I wonder, Chloe loosely references it there, I wonder whether they are setting a precedent, and they are sort of saying to Chelsea, and in particular Manchester City, look what we did to Everton. They had one charge and we deducted them 10 points. Just you wait. That's how it feels. We're sort of setting the groundwork in for that now. Because if you are Man City, I know we're going to come on to it, if you are Man City or you are Chelsea, you're looking at that going, wow, like, we're in big, big trouble here if that's the case for them. And they were holding hands with the Premier League, and they've been working with them for years and trying to sell their players and trying to make it right, if you like. And they've still done them like that. Whereas the other two in this conversation are doing the complete opposite. They're working against the Premier League's investigation. They could get hit with any, a whole manner of different things. But yeah, in terms of the Everton one, yes, hilarious. Yes, I don't think they're going to get relegated anyway.
No.
Yes, I think
it couldn't have happened in a better season.
Which is why I actually have more sympathy with the Southamptons, the Leeds Uniteds, and the Leicesters of this world, because they're now talking about sort of getting together and suing the Premier League / Everton. I get that, because this should have happened last season or the season before, which is when they would have gone. So that, for me, that's the worst thing about all of this from an Everton point of view. Like, I'd almost save my energy and not make banners for this weekend. I'd just take his 10 points because you'd probably be all right. I'd start concentrating on the potential suing, which could cost you £300-400 million. Then you go into administration and then you get another 9 points.
Which is less than what they got
Anyway.
By the way, I mean, it's wild, that, isn't it? I mean, that you can go into administration and get a lesser point deduction than what they did. Which, and the mad thing is for me, and I think I'm right in saying that the rules kind of change with how you deal with stadiums as capital expenditure and stuff like that in terms of the accountancy. In 2021, like, a new stadium build wouldn't have been included, but in 2022, a new stadium build was included. Now, for the period that they were talking about, they've had to then include it after the fact.
Yeah.
When it wasn't budgeted for that, because you changed the rules in 2022, which seems a bit unfair, to be honest with
you.
And ultimately, them building a new stadium, that benefits Liverpool, the city. It benefits the Premier League in terms of, it benefits Everton Football Club as well, of course, and their fans and every single away fan that's going to be going there. And they've not put their club at risk to do that. Like, this isn't them spending another 500 million on players.
No.
This is them improving their football
and that's
club.
I don't mind
that. This is the problem with the fucking rules.
Yeah. FFP is there to do that, sorry, as well. You just said not put the club at risk. FFP is to stop
the supporters,
wasn't it? In QPR beforehand. It was, and Middlesbrough a little bit as well. And Blackburn, actually, if we're getting all the clubs now. But that's what FFP was for. It was to stop clubs putting themselves in jeopardy. And Everton haven't done that, you're right. I mean, if anything, they're in more jeopardy now, the fact that this has happened, because we knew Mishavi was trying to sell recently. That's 666 partners, forgive me. 777, different number.
Jesus.
666 partners would be a good name. Well, that's a different concept altogether.
By the way. Yeah.
Anyway, regardless of that, six on the brain. Because all of a sudden, like, the money, Mishavi got 500 million for them. Like, who's going to pay that for them now when they've got this hanging over their head? They've got the point deduction on top of it. They're now in the relegation zone. He's not going to be able to sell. And if he is going to be able to sell, it won't be for that sort of figure.
But if they sue them, right, if those relegated clubs sue them, the Premier League could put Everton out of business.
Comfortably.
Which was the whole point of...
That's what I mean.
FFP.
Yeah, it's worth backwards.
It's stupid. Yeah. Like, if they're talking £100 million they're going to sue Everton for. Each club. What the fuck? How is that even remotely fair?
From their point of view, I get it, because that's losses. That's Premier League TV rights.
I totally get why they're doing it.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally get it as well.
But what the Premier League have done is they've made this situation happen.
Yeah. And this is part of the problem, isn't it? And when I think about this in all sports, right? I watch the Tour de France, watch cycling, big events, love it. Think it's absolutely brilliant. But there is a part of me that watches the Tour de France and thinks, well, that's fucking shit. Yous are all on drugs. No matter what happens, especially when one person is miles better than the others, you're doping. It's that because in 15 years' time, it'll come out that you were doping, and I'll be glad that I didn't get all excited for you. And this is what happens. But coming back onto the footy stuff, the rules need to be there from the beginning. You can't just keep chopping and changing the rules. And everybody's got to know what they're signing up for, and everybody's got to sign up for these rules. And there's also got to be... I don't know whether it's retrospective action is what they're handing out. It's not retrospective action that they're handing 10 points out now, but it should be dealt with in the year that it's happening. It can't be dealt with 2 to 3 years after it's happened, because you end up in a mess with relegated football clubs. And that's not right. It needs to, if you're going to do something like this, it's got to be the season, and it's got to be finished before the next season fucking starts. If someone's cheating... Because you can't have... Like, look, let's move on to the Manchester City stuff now, right? What's the fucking point of going back to 2009? What does it actually do? It hands three league titles to us, potentially. It hangs three league titles to United. But you've cheated, and it doesn't matter, because you've cheated so much that you are now a fucking superpower in world football. Mm. Whether you get relegated now or not, you're getting back a year later. And you're coming back in, and you're probably going to win league titles again in the future, because the foundations of your club are fucking massive again. Whereas if it had been caught in 2009, they'd never have got there, which is a major issue for me. You can't just keep looking back at seasons. We've got to know that the product that we're watching and we enjoy every single year is the best that it can be that year.
Yeah. You are right, and it'd be nice to have that situation. The problem with that is the length of time in which it takes to investigate this sort of stuff, then prove it, and then it'll be taken to appeal. Because already talking now about the Manchester City one, it's going to get tied up in all kinds of different lawyer cases and court cases. And people already, what I don't understand about that is people say Manchester City got the best lawyers in the business. I don't think the Premier League lawyers would be too bad either, to be honest with you. I mean, they'll know what they're doing. Multi-billion-pound industry, I think they'll be okay. So I'm not entirely sure that argument washes necessarily. But I take your point, and I think that's one thing that's been said about the Everton one, just to very quickly take it back to that, because they want the potential appeal and thus administration conversation done with this season, because otherwise it's going to get more complicated. If they survive by 4 points, for example, this year, then you've got three other clubs next season going, well, hang on a minute, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, I take your point. It would be something quite hilarious if City did get stripped of their titles. And I suppose what I don't understand with that is when people keep using the term relegation, it's been used by quite a lot of people over the weekend, and rightfully so. Some people definitely know what they're talking about as well in terms of lawyers and stuff like that and football finance people. Why is it just one relegation? Because if you extrapolate up the charges that City are facing to the ones Everton got and the points in there, they lose 1,150 points. That's more than one relegation. So why can you only relegate them once? I don't understand that.
Well, I don't know, to be honest with you. But what I will say, if you're caught cheating, you should be expelled. That's it, really.
Yeah.
Like, the 10 points is not going to make any difference to Everton. And I'm not sitting here and saying Everton should be expelled from the Premier League or whatever, like they were a naughty school kid in class or something. But, like, Everton have been open and honest with it and tried to deal with it. Manchester City have hidden this shit for the best part of 5, 6, 7 years now, and they continue to hide it. That's bad, man. That's terrible. Yeah. That's not just cheating, but it's covering your tracks and everything else. Like, I think it genuinely could be that they just go, nope, not for me. That's what you should do. Because why would you want them being the face of your brand if you were the Premier League?
Mm.
Like, you know, you don't see Lance Armstrong on all the cycling posters advertising the Tour de France, do you? Like, because he was a big drug cheat. Mm. And that's just the way that it goes.
Yeah.
Like, if you're cheating, get out. Mm. And it should be for everyone. But this is the problem for me, is that we're too in it ourselves to be able to see it. So when something happens to Man City, we laugh at them. When something happens to United, we laugh at them. When something happens to Everton, we just fucking laugh at them. Whereas we're all getting dicked every single week by the Premier League and VAR and all these other things that they can't get their grips of. Whereas we're football fans, we should all go, do you know what? That away, Bournemouth on a Monday night is fucking stupid.
Mm.
What are you doing there? Why are you moving my fixture to there? And this and that and this. And why are we paying £30 for this? You know, we want to be paying £20 for away tickets. And this is what it comes down to, is they are useless across the board, the Premier League, from putting in FFP to, well, the sustainability, whatever they're calling it nowadays, to dealing with fans, to da-da-da, and it just, the show carries on. And we all just laugh and go, ah, it's their turn. It's our turn next.
Yeah.
It'll be somewhere, they'll come for us. You know what I mean? They're just fucking useless across the board.
The truth is, they don't give a damn about fans. They care about money, and that's, football is sadly a business now. It's not what it used to be. And you just mentioned there, the Premier League don't care about fans. For the first time in how long, we've got a game on Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve? What? Why? Why? Because everyone who has kids who supports the football, I think it's Wolves v Chelsea, is it? Chelsea Wolves. I mean, why is that allowed? Why are we having a game Christmas Eve night when kids wake their parents up at like 5 a.m. because Santa's came? I don't understand. But like you mentioned there, it's never going to change. It's never going to change. Like, no matter, we can all stand together, and I still don't think it'd change because they're the one who's got all the power. I mean, look at us, what we've all done for talking about VAR so far this season, not a single thing's changed. You've got someone to now say VAR goal allowed instead of VAR check complete.
Well, to my point, Arteta's there saying, you know, everyone should get on with it when it's Liverpool Tottenham, and then a month later when it's him.
Yeah?
This is the problem, is the VAR needs sorting, everything needs sorting, sustainability stuff needs sorting.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to sign up to it. And for anyone, I saw someone in the comments saying it can't happen in a year because of the accounts. It fucking can, right? It just costs a bit more money. Like, you know what I mean? People can do it. The F1 put in a cost cap, and Red Bull got done before the next season started.
Mm.
Because they went through it. And here's the other thing is, there's always loopholes, and Chelsea's is a loophole thing that they've managed to go, oh yeah, we found this and there's a loophole and we've done this and all this type of stuff. Red Bull accounted something differently when they got caught than how they were supposed to, but it was a loophole. But they still got done. And Everton have accounted something in their accounts differently to how the Premier League wanted them, because the rules aren't set. The rules aren't clear enough and concise enough for everybody. So everyone thinks, I'll try and do this, I'll try and do that. Sort your fucking house out.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And you, what you mentioned earlier on is really interesting as well, about the look and sort of the, to the outside world. Like, we had the Premier League sort of president or whatever, your chairman, whatever he is, presenting the trophy to Manchester City last year, obviously, and all the while in the background, they got this 115 charges hanging over him. So he's got a big smile on his face, handing over the trophy, and everyone else is looking at that going, yeah, but they're under investigation for cheating for the past 8-9 years, whatever it is. And likewise with UEFA, we all remember when Manchester City were kicked out of the Champions League for 2 years, albeit in the Court of Appeal, CAS, that was deemed not a thing, and they ended up just getting a fine, stuff like that. But the difference with that is they had time bar in UEFA. Premier League don't have that, so they will go back as far as it needs be, hence what we're looking at now. But yeah, the hypocrisy knows no bounds in football. There's no two ways about that. But for me, I mean, as much as, again, I won't necessarily celebrate league titles given to us after the fact,
I don't want them.
I despise Manchester City and everything about that football club. Everything I've done since day one, even when they weren't even the threat to Liverpool. And Newcastle, similar. I can't abide football clubs that are manufactured in that sense. So if they are to be stripped of their titles and they are relegated, then I'm all for it. Not just because it means good for Liverpool, but I think it'd be better for football.
Yeah, it will be. Cheating is vile, because you've... I mean... it's just, you're up against a superpower that you just can never beat, because they're playing a different game than you. They've got unlimited funds. They've been cheating for how many years? And all those years where you think, like, even when we won the league, we beat a team that literally had been cheating.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is unbelievable, to actually overcome a team that's cheated as much. And we're all sat here saying 115 charges. Man City have been on the low since that happened, by the way. It's like you've not heard a peep out of them. I wonder how many more charges they've racked up in that time that the Premier League haven't even investigated yet.
Well, they don't need to now.
No?
They've established themselves,
kind of
they,
isn't it? I mean, their accounts came out this week, and like, they've broken the record for the amount of revenues a Premier League club's made. Like, it's 700 plus million pounds. Like, it's wild.
The timing of that was interesting, wasn't it? I do wonder, you mentioned earlier on, sort of, they are established now as a superpower, in inverted commas. I still don't quite see them that way myself, but...
7 titles in 11 seasons.
Yep.
Yeah, but how much is that? If
that's more than what Chelsea have fucking done, and they're established as a superpower.
But Chelsea were bigger from the outgo, I would argue.
They were, but that's what they are. But because they're a modern superpower.
Yeah, they are. Because of the way they have come to this stage in their development, I do wonder if they were to be stripped of those titles, not all of them, but the majority of them, and if they were to be relegated one, potentially two divisions, which is very possible, again, because very, very serious people. But I wonder how many people of these supporters who've come late to the party would stick by them through thick and thin. There will be some, of course. There's diehard Manchester City fans, of course there is. I remember them being in League One and still getting good attendances, so there is a core fan base there. But some of these,
he's probably been alienated more than most.
They have. Some of them don't like it. I have spoken of Man City fans in the past myself, who don't like this new Manchester City. They prefer how it used to be, which is mental, of course. But yeah, I do wonder how many of them would stick around if they were in League One all of a sudden again.
You know, the thing I don't get is the fact that the City fans feel like they live on a different planet. They just will not accept this 115 charges. It couldn't possibly. No, I know, I totally get that. But like, still, like, even when we were at that event the other day, and like, people were joking about 115 and like, as if it just isn't actually a thing. But like, this is something that, seriously, in years' time, you will get done for. And if you don't get done for, there's something that you've done with the Premier League that has made it go away, because the Premier League are there. And this is why I don't really mind. Like, I don't think 10 points is the right amount of points for Everton. I think that's too much. But if it is 10 points, as long as you're consistent with that, then I can't really say anything. As long for every single breach, there's 10 points minimum. And bear in mind, it shouldn't just be 10 points per breach for Manchester City, because Everton didn't cover their tracks. Manchester City broke all these FFP rules and then tried to cover their tracks for the past 7-8 years. So, yeah, it's I can't be arsed. Like, it's just, it's cheating, and... you just shouldn't, you shouldn't be allowed in the sport.
I've got a, I've got a graphic up in front of us from the Swedish Rumble, who's done a huge thread, but this one kind of summarises, I suppose. And he said, or they've said, what is MCFC charged for? The blow table summarises the charges. They can be sorted under 5 to 6 categories. I would say it's 32 charges. Some will say 115, since X regards several provisions in the Premier League book. Some of these charges are really complex, but not all. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9 not provided correct financial information, not provided full details of manager remuneration, 4 of them, not provided full details of Premier League player remuneration, 6 of them, breach UEFA FFP, that's 5 seasons of that, breach Premier League's profits and sustainability regulations, 3 years of that, and not assisted with the Premier League investigation, 5 full years of that, since all this stuff came out. And like this thread, like, I'll just sort of give you a quick whiz through it now, if you don't mind. It's absolutely brilliant. Swedish Rumble on Twitter, and you can see it goes into quite some depth and detail.
Very good.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. He breaks down all the charges, and they, I don't know if I know it's a he, that's why I'm saying they, he or she breaks down the charges and gives you clippings from the rule book and all kinds. Really go and check it out. It really is good. And just to sort of cover on the Chelsea stuff as well, actually, the Guardian and the Bureau of Investigative Journalism reported leaked files show the Russian billionaire used offshore companies to make transactions worth tens of millions of pounds to agents and associates, which appear to have been for the club's benefit and could have breached financial rules if they were not officially declared. They weren't officially declared.
No.
So Chelsea are in a spot of bother. They've not been charged with anything yet. Manchester City have got the 115 charges hanging over their heads, like the sword of Damocles. But does it not, to bring it back to Everton, does it feel, Dan, like Everton are being punished for what the Premier League can't do to the others?
Potentially. I think they'll see it that way. And I know a lot of people, immediately, myself included, kind of jumped on the bandwagon of, well, what about Manchester City? What about Chelsea? It's not quite as simple as that. The Everton one, time-wise, have been going on for longer for a kickoff. Plus, that was one charge. And they've been working in cooperation with the Premier League, which they'll see as a positive. But that's kind of sped things along as well. It's made life easier. When you are saying, look, here's the books, come and examine them, that makes the process a lot easier. Whereas, as you've just mentioned, Manchester City are very much not doing that, which makes it more complicated. Plus, the Man City one, in terms of calendar, goes further back than the Everton stuff, but in terms of when it became apparent to the wider public, not so. So I'm not surprised that's taken a little bit longer. Chelsea, likewise, that only came about in the last few weeks, really, so that's going to take a little bit of time. As you mentioned, not actually been charged as of yet. I imagine they won't get the book thrown at them quite as much as Everton or Manchester City when that does come around, because they're the ones who flagged it up, essentially, to the Premier League, and they're going to get some brownie points for that, I would imagine. It might just be a fine or something. So, yeah, I'm not surprised, but I'm also not surprised by the reaction as well, because when you have got Everton with their measly one charge getting deducted 10 points, and we have got Manchester City with their countless charges, and not just the charge as well, because we've all known there's been wrong with Manchester City for quite some time now. Even before the UEFA stuff came about, we've all known it stunk. Like, it just stunk from the outset, didn't it? Of course it did. And the remuneration stuff is the most interesting stuff to me, because I remember when Mancini was in charge, there was all talk about him getting paid in all kinds of different ways. And the fact that is amongst it is no surprise to me either. So, yeah, I do wonder, I mentioned it earlier, whether they have sort of set a bit of a precedent and made an example of Everton a little bit with this 10 points and gone, you think this is bad, just you wait. And I think if that is the case, for instance, if they did 10 points to Everton and then on Wednesday this week they said, oh, Manchester City are going to get relegated and we're stripping all their titles, the world, including yourself, Chloe, we were saying about consistency, would go, yeah, fair enough, wouldn't they?
More.
And you, me, yeah, everyone would want more, of course it would. But
how many divisions?
4.
Sunday League. Yeah. But that's part of the anger right now, isn't it? Especially from Evertonians, by the way, who do not want Liverpool to benefit in any way, shape or form from this, of course. You know, but even they are saying, well, what about Manchester City? It's kind of made the noise go up and up and up, which is kind of what the Premier League wanted.
They forgot all about those charges when they didn't want Liverpool to win a title, which is
this is why I've got a smile on my face about the 10 points for Everton, is that I remember them singing about having a party with Tottenham fans when they win the cup. But it kind of does, as an adult, bring me back to, this is the fucking problem with the banter shit.
Yeah, I hate it.
Like, everyone needs to just recognise that, you know, we don't like those certain football clubs and stuff like that, but, like, the Premier League is so corrupt and so useless, whether it's corrupt or not. It's completely and utterly useless that we all get shafted by them all the time.
Liverpool United could actually agree on something here, couldn't we? As a fan base, you know what I mean? We could both, for the first time in my lifetime, look at this and go, well, Man City are really the bad guys in all of this. So like, at least we're two established.
But I'll never forget that Man United wanted City to beat us to everything.
Well, exactly.
Because I'm a fucking fan, and that's what...
Yeah. Well, we're bigger than them, that's why. Yeah. But yeah, and the COVID stuff, when that came about, everyone's saying Asterix title. I'll tell you what, will be Asterix titles, all of Manchester City. And they should be already, when people have conversations about Manchester City and their wonderful football side, isn't it boss how good they are, look how they play, they've got all these lads on the bench, isn't it amazing? No, it's cheating. Say it for what it is.
Like Micah Richards and all of them going on in that Sky Sports studio about how good Pep Guardiola is and how good the football he play and how good of an establishment he is and the fact that they break these records, and it's like, yeah, but the reason they've got there is through years and years and years of cheating. Like, it's, they've not done it fairly. But are the Premier League not embarrassed because you're an extremely massive organisation and yet three people are cheating in your league?
Yeah, you're right.
Like, are you not embarrassed that you can't control these people? Like, they're taking the piss out of you, to be perfectly honest. And that's why, if they do, you know, come down hard with consequences.
I'm all for it. And Pep Guardiola stuff is another conversation altogether, by the way, and I'm not his biggest fan, so forgive me for one moment. There's already investigations going on back in Spain in La Liga about like all the league titles he won with the best reasons.
He's under
like
investigation collectively across City and Barcelona for about 20 of his 25 league titles.
I think we have to say that one of his league titles looks legit at this moment
in
time.
It's a Bayern one.
Yeah, probably. Well, you can't lose anyway, so you may as well. You probably got there and went, don't need to cheat here, do I?
Yeah, it's fine, we'll be alright. We'll just carry on buying their best players.
Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah.
Do you want to play a bit of bingo? How many years until City actually get charged?
5 or 6.
No, it won't be that long.
I can't live that long, I don't think, waiting.
I think it happens next year.
No, I
next
don't.
Next summer.
Next summer.
Okay. End of this season, next summer.
And what are you saying happens then?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think they do get relegated to the Championship, which I don't understand, by the way. And they get relegated to the Championship and they get 4 of their titles taken off them.
But I don't understand. They just come straight back up. Like, this is the thing I don't get. Like, how...
Do you think all the players stay?
Yeah.
No.
They'll be up there the next year.
No, I don't think they do.
But you said next year.
Yeah, I'm just saying things.
A lot of those players are in, like, I mean, most of them are in the 30s. They've got a lot of young, really good, talented footballers. But, like, some of them are in their 30s. Those players will just stay there because...
Maybe Phil Foden will absolutely Del Piero it.
Yeah.
And stay.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kevin
because he'll finally
stay.
Get a run in the first team that he deserves anyway, to be fair.
Will he be able to still, because they're in the Championship? Look, I don't... They've came out with record...
Revenue,
haven't they? Does that mean how much you can pay your players and stuff? Like, will any of that change if they're in the Championship?
They made 80 million profit, I believe, last accounts, which is...
That factors into what you can spend, it does, yeah. But the problem is so much of that has been investigated as well, because not all that's legit.
I'd like that to be investigated now.
I reckon they go down 2 divisions, but it doesn't happen for half a decade.
Half a decade?
But I might... My God.
And by then... They could be on... Well, how many league titles are they on now?
I don't know. Is it 9? In total, I think it's 9 across...
They could be on, like, 40 league titles at that point.
Yeah. But every single one of them... This is the problem. Every single one of them from now on is going to be tarnished. Every single one of them. It should be, anyway, because they should look at it and go, yeah, you're cheating. What? You've got a lawyer. Is it Panic, the name? You've got Lord Panic looking into all your stuff, mate. You're fucked.
Is there a way in which they don't get any of their titles taken off them because it's already happened? And they just get relegated. How is that allowed? How are you allowed to cheat and keep your titles? How does that work?
Well, you're not, are you? But then the Premier League will be looking at that going, is that in the Premier League's best interest to have titles taken off them? It's something Serie A had to decide. And Serie A, like, to be fair, when you think about what Serie A actually did to AC Milan and to Juventus and Fiorentina, I mean, that was a hell of a decision. And I don't back the Premier League to be able to take such a strong decision.
No. That is the precedent, though. And if the Premier League had any backbone, they should do that. Because you're right, you mentioned it earlier, Chloe, like, they are making a mockery of it. They've been making a mockery of it for nigh on a decade now. So the Premier League do... Let's just say they're banged to rights on 50 of these 115 charges that we're talking about, and they have the capacity to prove them, and it's beyond reasonable doubt, and they absolutely nailed them down on it. The Premier League should then turn around and say, you've been absolutely taking the piss for 10 years here. We're going to take this, 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 and this off you. Oh, and by the way, here's a fine, here's a points reduction, see you in League One, whatever it is. That should be the way to go about it. But unfortunately, we live in a world now whereby that's such a bad image for the Premier League. They probably will avoid that decision. You're right, Serie A did it, and you know, credit to them for it. But I'm not entirely convinced. I'd like to be convinced, but I'm not entirely convinced the Premier League will follow that precedent.
No. There's a couple of good chat messages in here, actually. In Carlos B, 5-year ban from the Premier League sent to the National League, maximum fine and a transfer ban.
Transfer
ban's
an interesting point, yeah.
Prem backbone, just this, one of these things is not like the others, just doesn't belong. And then we got Hitchenbars, who sent us a super chat and says, in order to stop them from keeping all their best players, would you give them a European ban? Now, this is the one that really interests me, because there's a part of me, I don't know whether you can do this, but I'm assuming the FA have to give permission to enter those clubs. Wouldn't it be great if they went, yeah, okay, we're going to relegate, yeah. We know you're coming back the next season. We're going to give you a 10-year European ban and watch how many players don't go to Man City because of that. Hmm. Because that actually would hurt them a lot, wouldn't it? Like, why wouldn't it happen? Because you've got to... If I'm the FA, I want people who play by the rules to...
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like anything, I suppose. You know, if you're going out and you're working somewhere, you want someone from your work to go and do well for you. You know what I mean? If the Premier League's like, well, I don't want to send cheats into Europe. I've got to get my own house in order. It won't happen, you're right, of course, because the Premier League are fucking knobheads or whatever. But like, that could be an interesting way around it, to give them a European ban or a transfer ban or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. I think a transfer ban's a really interesting
point. I'd love it.
And it's been done in the past. Obviously, Chelsea suffered one 18 months ago, 2 years ago now, was it? That was related to something slightly different. I'm not quite sure how the two marry up. But yeah, there has to be something more, and what it cannot be in the amongst it is a fine. Because a fine does absolutely nothing. Like, if they walk away from this with a fine, like they did in UEFA, like I mentioned earlier, to be fair, a lot of people when this first emerged were like, oh, well, they just get hit with a fine, or look, the UEFA one didn't stick. It is a completely different proposition because, as I mentioned earlier, the time bar and stuff, City were found guilty of what UEFA charged them off, like they were done bang to right on it, but because of the time elapsed, they couldn't do them for it. So that doesn't exist in the Premier League. So I don't have a concern there, because I understand people be like, well, it'll just go away again. It won't. It will absolutely come to fruition in one way or another. So yeah, I'm still confident and holding out hope they will get done for it. And I think you're right. I think something like a European ban, a transfer ban, would just be that little bit of extra incentive that we might need.
It's really interesting stuff, though, and it does sort of make you want to get the popcorn out. If you know when the City thing's coming, you could book a couple of days and sit on Twitter and enjoy it and all that type of stuff. But I suppose that wraps up the podcast for this week. I don't think we've solved anything. I think we've decided that the Everton thing is majorly harsh, probably. We're looking forward to what happens to Manchester City. We're hoping the Premier League has a backbone, but I think ultimately for me, kind of just wish that everybody would get on the same page with regards to Premier League and get them to sort their shit out, because it's their inadequacies that I think allow football clubs to take the piss out of them, to be honest with you. And you've got teams like, look, Liverpool, I think from the get-go with FSG and stuff, have kind of wanted FFP to work. It was in their best interest, because they didn't have the money to do it.
No.
Like, you know, they didn't have the money to go toe-to-toe with it, City, and now Newcastle and these other teams and stuff. But then equally, there'll be fans of this going, you didn't even mention the fact that six clubs tried to get into a European Super League. No, I didn't. You're right. and what was that? A small fine did we get in the end?
We got fined for that in the end.
It was like £3.5 million.
Yeah. People do extrapolate that upwards, though, and say they tried to leave the Premier League. We didn't. Yeah. They tried to leave the Premier League. It was a rival for the Champions League is what it was. Yeah. So people do misremember that a little bit. But yeah, Liverpool were wrong, by the way. Absolutely. And as were the other five
and
clubs.
As did our fans tell them.
Yes, yeah. 100%. Yeah, exactly.
That's the other thing.
Absolutely.
Jürgen Klopp also was very much on the fan side in terms of saying it as well. It wasn't like we had people trying to hide things or not state it for what it was.
What I will say, and I'll be in the minority here on the Super League, forgive me, UEFA aren't the good guys amongst all this, by the way. No. Let's get that out there early.
They use that to change the Champions League.
Exactly, and that stinks as well. One of the major issues with the European Super League was the lack of meritocracy in it, in the fact that it was a closed shop and only those clubs were in it forever. If that had some form of relegation and promotion, I think people would have been slightly more open to the idea of it. But it was wrong from the outset, and it was ill-timed and all the rest of it. But again, I'll say, like, if that was a rival for the Champions League and everyone's holding UEFA to this really high standard, that's not exactly true either.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So there you go. We're going to go over to redmenplus.com. You can join us to take a look at all of our rivals' fixtures. I'm sure the City stuff is going to crop up again and rear its ugly head. We'll be on redmenplus.com in around about 15 minutes, something like that. You can use the code BIASED, B-I-A-S-E-D, and you'll get 50% off a monthly captain subscription for the first 2 months. Come over there. You'll get all the Christmas content and stuff like that as well, which promises to be great. We've had a few meetings about that stuff. We're looking forward to filming that and getting that out there for everybody over the Christmas period. Obviously, you get like 11 fixtures worth more as well, to be fair, because hopefully we'll have the Cup stuff coming in there back middle of January and stuff like that. So yeah, get over redmenplus.com. We'll be doing the next show, the Biased Football Podcast, very soon. Thank you very much, and thank you very much, and we'll see you next time. Ciao.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.